gotta hand it to Arsenal. They are trying to speed up this Liverpool 20th league title win as humanly fast as possible. I mean, they are really going above and beyond to crown Liverpool champions of the Premier League. And, you know, today again, points dropped by Arsenal. And at this point, it's almost like it's intentional. I mean, are they even trying to win? I mean, they knew when they lost to West Ham, it was over. But, I mean, it's really over now. You know, I mean, you've got, like, you know, Gary Neville. Yeah, the title is theirs. It's going to go to Liverpool. You know, whatever Gary Neville's saying, whatever he's doing. Roy Keane's like, yeah, Arsenal better look out to finish in the top four. I mean, okay. Are they going to drop out the top four? I don't really believe that. And honestly, England's going to get this coefficient, so who cares? You're going to get fifth place. Is going to get Champions League. By the way, Man City, you're in fifth place right now. Don't get too comfortable there. You're in fifth place, and Newcastle plays tomorrow. Time of this recording is Sunday, March 9th, and Newcastle plays West Ham tomorrow. Can draw a level with City on points, 47 apiece. Brighton 1 point back. And there's nothing guaranteed for the cheater pumpkin eaters from Manchester, that being Pep and the bald fraud agents of UAE, Arab Emirates, wherever, you know, whatever country they're at in the Middle East. Who cares at this point? Qataris or PSG, UAE is City, whatever. But I digress. It's Liverpool, you know, just to give you guys perspective. The city of Liverpool is already planning the parade, so they already know. It's not a belief anymore. It's knowledge. It's like Liverpool are the 20-time English First Division champions, Premier League champions, top-tier champions, whatever you call it. They are the 20-time champions of English football, okay? Draws them level with the Manx. As I said on the last show, they already have more trophies than the Manx overall. This will add to that. Probably a League Cup coming a week from today against Newcastle, the FA, the League Cup, excuse me. The final is next Sunday, March 16th. That would be trophy, I believe, 70. Premier League is 71 and possibly Champions League 72. To get the treble and hold that, flip the bird to City about, you know, they went on and on 3 years ago, 2 years ago when they won the treble. And see, this is the hard part. The hard part is that City have really, everything that they've earned the last 15 years has been complete, just utter cheating. So it's kind of, you know, Klopp should have three or four Premier League titles. You know, Liverpool with this one this year, four or five in the last seven, probably, seven or eight years. City is, I mean, beaten us, what, 2-3 times by 1 point? So there is that. But you got to say that, you know, outside of Man City, it really has been a decade of dominance by Liverpool. And Arsenal's come on here in the last 5 years, and they've really tried everything. They're the little engine that could, right? Except they're the little engine that could, except get to the very, very last part of the race, aka the finish line. So they're going to finish league runners up for the third consecutive season once again. And you know, well, I mean, according to Roy Keane, they're going to be lucky to finish in the top four. But I do believe that Arsenal will finish in second place. You know, Chelsea's win today puts them back in the top four. And then you have Nottingham Forest, who just outright beat City 1-0 over the weekend from home. That was a home match for Forest. And yeah, 1-0 shutout, clean sheet, you know, can't argue that. Yeah, you know, and the thing is, you know, they spent all this money City did in the January window, you know, Marmoush and all these players, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not doing them any good. So, City done, Arsenal done, you know, and Liverpool are planning a parade. So it's hard to keep talking about the league at this point since it's over. I mean, it's just a formality at this point. But we have to. We'll just focus on some things here about transfers, because Liverpool, I believe, are going to have a lot of moving pieces this summer. You can't, first of all, You have three of the biggest name players on the continent slash the world that are basically free agents come June 30th, okay? We'll talk about the three of them in detail here on this show, because I have interesting perspectives I want to give on all three of these individuals and why it's okay if one of them doesn't come back. And I'm fully okay with that. So can you guess who that is that I'm talking about? Yes, and it's just to add this insult to injury, it is great to hear the Manc pundits, Neville and Roy Keane, but especially Gary Neville, because he is such an obnoxious little punk. It's great to hear them concede defeat, and it's to Liverpool. It's like, I don't think they were as bothered the last few years when City have won the titles. It's kind of like, you know, they're the little brother. It's like, but Liverpool, we're hated rivals, man. Goes back decades and decades and decades, a century, whatever. And Manchester City's the flavor of the month, right? Liverpool is the flavor of your life. And to have to admit that, you know, it's like, yeah, Liverpool's back on their perch. Yeah, Alex Ferguson back on the perch. So it just must suck to be a United supporter right now. And let's not even talk about all the cuts that Jim Radcliffe is making, Sir Jim Radcliffe, right? All the he's gonna close down the Manchester United London office. He's sacking all the front office employees and all the people in catering. And the people that actually depend on this club to make a living and pay their rent or their mortgage, we're not getting rid of the players and that personnel that are actually losing these matches. We're getting rid of the people that actually make the club function on a day-to-day basis. Critical staff members, essential staff members, right? No, Jim Radcliffe, he's cutting out catering, he's cutting out benefits, he's cutting out the meal plan. It's worse than we thought at United, okay? It's really bad. So today, again, as I said, Arsenal are trying to speed this Liverpool title win up as humanly fast as possible. Two more points dropped. They get an equalizer late to draw United. United has to be sitting there conflicted because they're like, well, we beat Arsenal, we're speeding up Liverpool's process as well. There was a no-win situation for Arsenal and United. United were going to drop points. Either way, doesn't hurt us. If they take points from Arsenal, it speeds up our title race push, our title push, the race for the title is what I'm saying. There's no race, just simply our title push. And so, I mean, it was just, it's great. It's like great as a Liverpool supporter watching this match today, because it's like, you can't lose. If Arsenal beats United, United lose, yay. If United win, then Arsenal loses, yay. And if they draw, yay, yay. And they drew. So it's a double win. And, you know, it's like, Arsenal, whatever, where do you go from here? But, like, let's focus on this, this Champions League match during the week, right? PSG, and then, so this is what started the week out with Liverpool having to play against PSG at the Parc des Princes, right? This is the first leg of the two-leg fixture. And everyone said, you know, I heard a lot of Liverpool pundits themselves, so, you know, talking about this was going to be a 2-1 loss, you know, just basically get it back to Anfield, down one goal. Well, hey, look, we're up 1-0. And I want to focus this two players this week that I'm so happy for. Talk extensively about Darwin Nunez and the mental blocks, the mental issues, these ghosts that kind of haunt him in his head, right? The immense pressure he feels when he puts on a red shirt. And he draws a penalty against Southampton on the weekend. He scores a goal, gets the equalizer, and then draws the penalty that Salah then converts to put us ahead, right? And then we never look back from there. What a great, just a great game. And the supporters love him. I mean, like, Nunez gets chance. He gets serenaded off the pitch all the time. It's like it goes back to that the Newcastle match last season when he scored those two goals there at the end of the game to give us the win. People have never forgotten it. And he does this. He always, at the very end, when it's like you're literally ready to cut the rope with this guy, And he comes out and he gives you a performance. And I heard Slot, you know, Slot's comments after the match, you know, why did you stick with Nunez at the half? Because he made some halftime. He pulled Tsimikas off. You know, Tsimikas is not, he needs to go. He needs to go in the summer. Joe Gomez needs to go in the summer. Other people need to go in the summer. But absolutely, Tsimikas and you know, we changes were made. McAllister comes on, Rabo comes on, and end up scoring three goals unanswered in the second half, win comfortably 3-1. And get to 70 points, 10 matches left, title is ours. And yeah, it's going to be a very fantastic, it could be a really, really fantastic May. And that's where I'm happy for Nunez on that. And then the other guy I'm happy for is Harvey Elliott, right? So Harvey Elliott is trying to get us that trouble, that elusive trouble that I was talking about, that we would love to flip the proverbial bird in Man City's faces, because we did it legitimately. We didn't have all this this blood oil money that financed our summers and our winter transfer windows to get all these mercenary players in here. No, we actually thought through very, very intelligent transfers, very, very tactically minded transfers with player roles in consideration and team fit in consideration and how they're going to be in the dressing room and from a leadership perspective, right? These are all well thought out transfers by Liverpool. Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, Gakpo, Lucha, you know, going down all the way to McAllister, right? All these transfers are just well thought out. And it's like City's like, Haaland. Yeah, we'll take him off the group, put him in the grocery cart. Marmoush this January. It's just, you know, we did it the right way and they cheated to everything. Now the cheating is, and even they can't even cheat right anymore. So even cheating, they can't do well anymore. So the ship's sinking, and we are sailing right across this ocean known as the continental trouble here. And so Harvey Elliott got us one step closer to that 87th minute goal. And Harvey Elliott, right? He's a lad, right? You know what I mean by that, right? He's a lad. He's the guy. You got to go with Harvey Elliott. You see him at the pub. You're like, Harvey, mate, you know, you're a lad. I'm going to buy him a pint. I'm going to sit there and talk to him. And you just love the kid because, first of all, he gives you 150% every time he steps on the pitch. And he's not the fastest player. He's not the most the most technically gifted player. He's not the best at anything, but he's a Swiss Army knife, right? Comes on in as a substitute. He can start too, but he can come on as a substitute. And he gives you 30 minutes of everything he's got. And what he's got is enough because he can pass. He can score. He can dribble. He does his role, whatever Slot gives him to do, I believe, very well, much better than he did under Klopp, because I think he was kind of suffering from an identity crisis under Klopp, much like Gakpo was. I think there's a couple of players that were suffering from an identity crisis under Klopp there at the end. But Slot has sorted it out. He's figured out this is where this player goes, this is where this was. And he's unlocked a lot of Harvey Elliott, right? So The haters, we'll call them, midweek, are talking about Liverpool were lucky. I mean, I even heard Stevie Nicol on ESPN. He's Liverpool legend, right? I mean, who cares if you're lucky? There's plenty of clubs that were lucky to do things that they did. Bayern Munich were lucky to get a Champions League winner in the final during the COVID season against PSG. That was really PSG's title to win with, you know, Neymar and Mbappe there. And they did, and they lost 1-0. Chelsea were lucky the very next season. Thomas Tuchel won the Champions League. When you think about who are the most forgotten about Champions League winners, Chelsea's been so average in the league since 2017, since Conte won that league title, right? They finished top four. They've never challenged for the title again, right? Even the season they won the Champions League, I think they finished fourth in the league. I think about Mourinho, when I think about Chelsea success, right? That goes all the way back to, what is it? Was that 2015? And Conte won it, but they weren't playing in Europe that season. They had an uncontested league title. They didn't have to rotate their squad. Diego Costa, Eden Hazard, you know, those guys, right? And N'Golo Kanté. Yeah. So this is different. Because Liverpool are playing a cup final next week. They're playing league games, obviously, all the time. And they're playing Champions League in the first year of a new format where there's more matches than ever, especially if you had to play the playoff, the knockout round there a couple weeks ago, which PSG did have to do. So, you know, it's tougher this year. And Liverpool go out there, play 87 minutes of, I guess, lucky football, and they get the winner. I don't care that if, you know, Trent and the like of them were getting beat off their line and whatever. PSG didn't score. They kept, you know, Alisson kept the clean sheet. He played a very good game too, by the way. Shout out to Alisson. All that matters is the end result. And PSG dropped a game at home that they absolutely could not afford to drop at home, because you know when you go to Anfield on a European night, especially in a Champions League knockout game, ask Barcelona, ask Messi, what happens when you do that? A 3-0 lead is not safe for the opposing team because Liverpool score four. So PSG knows that it's pretty much done and dusted, right? And if I'm wrong, hey, look, I'll stand corrected. I'll come back on here next week or the week after and tell you I was wrong. But conventional wisdom will tell you a 1-0 Liverpool lead going into a second leg fixture at Anfield is done and dusted. It's over. It's done. Liverpool are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, okay? So that's why that was so big. So Harvey Elliott, big moment for him. Nunez gets the big moment, a couple of big moments on the weekend. So two players that I'm thrilled that had really redeeming weeks and couldn't be happier for them. Love seeing these guys get their opportunity and make the most of it. And they asked Slot, you know, in the comments after the match with Southampton, you know, again, why didn't you take Nunez off? Well, because he said of his goal-scoring capability. Right? He's capable of it. And our good friend Craig on YouTube, love him to death, man. I do his watch-alongs. I watch. But saying that Darwin Nunez is not a professional footballer, that's a step too far for me. Okay? And I said that 2 weeks ago. I'll say it again now. He will go down as sort of this cult hero. And I don't know. He really hasn't done anything in like big money. Now, if he pulls a Divock Origi and scores a goal in the Champions League final to take us to a seventh European crown, then, and he wins us a continental treble, then yeah, okay. Every single blunder he's made the last 3 years is forgotten, forgiven, and in the past. But there is this, as it stands right now, he has not done that, okay? And there's no telling if he will do that, you know? But there is some, like, this cult hero status around Darwin Nunez. And it's nice to see him kind of earn those stripes, I guess, by putting in a performance that's worthy of said, admiration from the supporters. I can't tell you how much it warms my heart to have to come on here, to be able to come on here 2 weeks later after just doing this heartfelt segment on him. And report that all is well in Darwin Nunez land. So that's where the state of affairs are right now with Liverpool. Great week. And we're going to talk about there's not much to recover. Okay, we were lucky to win in Paris. Great. Southampton, we got pissed off by that goal right before the half. Okay, adjustments were made. Slot tactically put some players on. He knows this is gonna change the outcome of the game at the end. Pull some players off. Trent comes off. Okay, we're going to put Endo on. Endo's your lockdown holding number six. We got that guy in there. Now we're going to switch to a defensive stance. 3-1. Okay. Southampton, worst team in the Premier League this season. Nothing really to talk about. 3-1. Salah bangs the brace. And yeah, it brings it home. Two penalties. Well earned. And you know, Nunez got the one and then Southampton shot themselves in the foot, or rather the hand, I should say, on the other one. So moving on, we're going to talk real quick about something that, because we got to look beyond this season, right? And I want to, this is the main topic, because people are saying, you know, who's Liverpool transfer, what are the transfer targets? You know, Kirkez, Isak, Well, Newcastle's already said, you're going to have to pay us 193 million quid right now to even talk about Alexander Isak, right? Just say you don't want to sell him. Just say he's not for sale. He's your best player. He's one of the best number nines in England statistically. And you're not going to sell him. 193, we're going to pay Neymar money to go to the table with you. No, we're not doing that. Arsenal's not going to do that. They need a number nine worse than anybody in the world, and they're not going to do that. That is absurd money for someone who's not the best player in England. No, he's not Mo Salah. He's not the best player in England. He's not the Egyptian king. He's not probably going to and should win the Ballon d'Or, should Mo Salah. He should win the Ballon d'Or for 2025 without a shadow of a doubt, having the season of his life. But that's not Alexander Isak, so that's ridiculous. But Kirkez, Frimpong, Florian Wirtz, and you know, you're hearing City's going to get Wirtz to go replace Kevin De Bruyne, right? Well, there's a very good chance that will happen because they aren't. I don't even know if they're worried about tactical fit. They just know that he's probably the best young and up and coming German player on the planet, and you know, next Kai Havertz, next. Mesut Ozil, that type of caliber of player, right? Next Toni Kroos. So that's the step, right? Real Madrid in this case, and then for Ozil, Real Madrid, Arsenal, and, you know, what's next for Florian Wirtz after Leverkusen, right? Well, it's going to be a bigger club and a bigger league. So you're looking at Spain and England in those two cases. And I don't think he's going to Spain. I think, you know, City, you're looking at Kevin De Bruyne is washed. He's lost his pace. His ability to score a goal out of nothing is gone. So where's LA Liverpool, right? We're talking about any and all transfers are open. This is the thing. I don't want to necessarily speculate. It's all rumors. And we're not even at the window yet. The window doesn't even open until July. We still have a Club World Cup to go before then, right? That's in June. I just think I could tell you, look, this is, you know, Liverpool's going to look to get Prime Zidane. We're going to go back in time and go and sign him. That's just as ridiculous as me saying we're going to sign Kirkez. We're going to sign whoever you want. Name the player. Like I said, you name Frimpong, for example, or any number of. There's, you know, if you want to, you could throw, you know, there was links to Joshua Kimmich from Bayern Munich. And I think he's got other clubs in mind. But if you had said before last summer that the only player that we were going to sign in the 2024-25 transfer window, summer and January would be Federico Chiesa from Juventus. I think most Liverpool supporters will look at you cross-eyed. Like, are you crazy? That's who we signed, though. That's it. No one had him on the radar. He wasn't linked to anything, except maybe a move outside of Juventus. But where does that go to, right? Or you know, maybe he's got one more year with Juventus. They try and see how he comes back from that knee injury, and then he has a decent season. Maybe they sell him. Instead of selling him for, you know, what was it, 14, 16 million we bought him for, they sell him for, you know, 30, 35 if he has a rebound season. But that was it. There were so many names that were linked to Liverpool, you know, going back to Zubimendi, all this stuff, and we didn't sign any of them. We signed Chiesa, a winger, a position we didn't even need, and he doesn't even play. So I'm going to focus not on these transfers here in March about who will or who won't, because it's ridiculous for me to even think about who's going to be playing. We could get prime Oliver Kahn in goal. You know, like he might go in the time machine and step back to his 25-year-old self, and he never goes to Bayern. We get him to come to Liverpool, and that's Alisson's replacement. That is absurd, and I'm speaking nonsense because it's nonsense right now to talk about anything you're transfer-wise. But what's not nonsense is to talk about what we do know. We do know that there are three major contracts that are expiring come June 30th. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Mohamed Salah, and Virgil van Dijk. Let's talk about each one of them real quick in depth, okay? The first one I'm talking about is Mohamed Salah. Now, I want to talk about him first because he is having the season of his life. And I will say this. Whenever there's a contract, we call this the contract year, right? This is the contract year. Contract's up this year. and you're signed, you're set for a big extension, right? This is the, you earned it. You know, what do you do? What do you do with this guy, right? He's going to win the Golden Boot in the Premier League. He's got all these assists. He's got all the, I mean, he's having the, this arguably is a better season than his 2017-18, right? When he just seemingly scored a goal or a brace every single match, right? This is, he's such a complete player now. He's like, you know, 99.9% from the spot with penalties. He's such a great facilitator now, and his distribution is on point so many times in a game. And then he's got the ability again, like what I told you that Kevin De Bruyne has lost, the ability, he has lost the ability to score out a goal, score a goal out of nothing, and Salah still has that. Salah can still dribble around two defenders. He can still get in the box. He can cross it. He can shoot it. He can score himself, take it, whatever way you want it. Bottom left, bottom right, top shelf, anywhere you want the ball placed, he can place it. Or he can set up Gakpo or Diaz or Nunez or Jota, whoever it is, going central, going wide on the other post. Boom, goal, done. Assist to Salah. So I always caution, right? There's this cautionary tale about this guy named Joe Flacco. And like, oh, it's American football. Well, you know what? This is the best example I got for you. I'm gonna compare the situation, right? So Flacco, as I called him, is that bang average American football quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, right? But then in 2012, he has the postseason of his life. I think so. Baltimore, spoiler, they win the Super Bowl, and he's in a contract year. And I told all my friends at the time, I said, don't sign him. He gave you one good postseason out of five, and he's not that good. He really, really isn't that good. Nah, man, you got to sign him. You got to sign him. He did what he was supposed to do. Okay, yes, he won you games when he was supposed to win them, but you have to look at the whole picture. You played excellent football for 5% of your entire duration of time with the Baltimore Ravens. The other 95%, you were good, not great. Yeah, I want a max extension. Of course you do. And I say, let him walk. Let him go to whoever. Whoever was looking for a quarterback that year, let them sign him. Baltimore, and what did Baltimore do? Of course they signed him because he's due. He's due. He just won them a Super Bowl. But was it really him, or was it Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and the lot of those, you know, what was it really those players? You know, who really won that Super Bowl? But anyways, Flacco's the quarterback. You're going to get the praise. You win the Super Bowl. They're going to talk about you, right? So they re-sign him, and Baltimore is a bang. They missed the playoffs. They missed the playoffs a few times there in the next 5-6 years. Baltimore isn't a perennial title contender again until they draft Lamar Jackson years later. Was it 5-6 years later, I believe? So cautionary tale. Now, the reason I say that Mo Salah does not translate to this is because Mo Salah has been exceptional, if not world-class, in almost every single season, if not every single season. And as of last year, he came back from AFCON, was kind of banged up, and he never really regained his form until this season. But he was still playing well before AFCON last year. Liverpool were, if you recall correctly, league leaders around that time. Salah's whole picture is exceptional. He is one of the greatest players in Premier League history. He is one of the top three players in Liverpool history. He's Mount Rushmore worthy. If that to those of you who know what I mean by that, and I think most of you do, but he's Mount Rushmore worthy. Okay. Mount Rushmore worthy, okay? And that's the difference. So where I said don't pay Joe Flacco because he hasn't earned it. He had one good postseason, so you have one good dance out of 10, right? Or whatever. Salah's been dancing on Dancing with the Stars. The judges have been impressed with him since day one. I mean, he's just, you know, let's just call it what it is. They've been impressed with him since day one. Sign him. There is no bad investment here, okay? 32 years old. He wants to stay till 2027. Puts him there. That's the 2027 season. So 2027, 2028. Gets you through his year 35 it gets you through his contract year 35. And you let him, if he wants to go play in MLS or wants to retire, or I mean, I would honestly retire as a Red. Why disgrace yourself in MLS or Saudi Arabia? Just, you've made this money. You know, if Liverpool can, you know, maybe pay him 400,000 quid a week, you know, who cares? What, he's done so much for this club. He's been there for 7 years at this point, and he's earned the right to stay there for the full decade, see this project through to the end. The slot, Klopp, transition, multiple Premier League titles, hopefully multiple Champions League wins, and or Champions League crowns, European cups, and if he wins, so he's already got two Premier League titles in the bag. If he wins the Champions League for the second time in his career this season, I mean, that's just that propels you. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's a select few players. If that's a very small number. Are there any players that have won two Champions Leagues and two Premier League titles with the same club in their career? I mean, that I need to look at that. There may not be. I haven't researched it. Okay, I don't have Stat Boy from ESPN working for me. I'm one tax ID number. Okay. I don't have that in front of me, but it could be Salah by himself. He might be alone in that neighborhood. But he also, either way, it'd be a select few. It's not many, if it's any at all, right? Maybe I'll have that for you next time on the show, or you can Google it yourself. Whatever. So that's why I have no issue whatsoever with them signing him to a big extension. I say give Mo Salah a blank check and let him write the numbers in and just return it to you. Make it a 3-year deal, and whatever Liverpool needs to do to put the money in the bank for him, let's do it. That's for me, no brainer. Let's talk about Virgil van Dijk next, right? So Virgil van Dijk has obviously lost some of his physical skills, but what we talked about a couple weeks ago is he is at the peak and the height of his intelligence, right? A little bit of a communication error with Allison yesterday on Saturday. But VVD at his best is still elite. He's an elite level center back. And again, 3-year extension. I want Salah and VVD to finish their careers out at Liverpool, because I think, and the same year, I want them both to sign 3-year extensions. I want them both to hang up their boots in 2028, and I want them to both go down as two of the greatest players, not only in Liverpool history, but in English football history. I want them to truly cement their legacy and become, like I said, Mount Rushmore figures, icons, legends, and historic figures that we're still talking about a century from now. That's what I want. VVD's just too intelligent to let go. He's got too much football IQ, and there's a lot to be said about that. There's a lot of players that are athletically gifted. You know, you talk about Mario Balotelli. He's one of the most gifted players that you've ever seen in your life. He's got pace. He's got finishing ability, but he is a complete and utter just disaster. He's a complete and utter shit show on the pitch, right? He is a ticking time bomb waiting to go off, and you just never knew what you were going to get with him, right? I mean, God bless Jose Mourinho and all the managers that had to put up with him at any point in time, whether it was for Inter, whether it was for AC Milan, whether it was for whoever it was for. I mean, it's Balotelli's played for damn near everybody, Liverpool, and I think he was at Man City. He's been everywhere. I can't name you all the clubs he's played at, but I can tell you everywhere he's been a natural disaster. So, but gifted, absolutely gifted, a specimen, right? And VVD is not that anymore, but he's the opposite of what Balotelli is, okay, on the pitch. Like, intellectually, he's brilliant, and his football IQ, he helps Ibrahima Konate be better, okay? He helps him be better. He helps whoever's in that back line be better. So he's captain, dressing room guy, all these things, and you sign him. You just sign him, right? And now we get to Trent Alexander-Arnold, okay? He's the one that, And I can already say, like, I think his mind's already made up. I think he's already knows he's going to leave Merseyside. And I don't think there's any intention of him coming back. I think that he wants to go play for Real Madrid, and, you know, more power to him for that. But he's the one of the three that I am least upset about losing, okay? Now, you can obviously disagree with me if you want on this. I do not think that he is the best defensive fullback we have on the roster currently. I think as a defender, that I think Connor Bradley is actually probably a better defender than he is right now as we currently speak. And Connor Bradley is his spell. So you already have your backup that's coming in next season. Connor Bradley just needs to stay healthy and continue to play in slot system. And I think that you've got a ready-made replacement right there. Or you can go buy somebody, whatever. Robertson. I think Robertson still, even though he's, you know, looks like he's lost a little bit of a step, still a better defender. Where Trent excels, and this is no secret to anyone, is his set pieces, right? He's an excellent free kick taker, excellent corner taker. His crosses are on point. His foot is gifted and magical, and he can put the ball in places that only other players can dream of, right? But that is not enough to warrant the astronomical price tag, supposedly, that he is asking for. And so, I tell you, is he even going to succeed at Real Madrid? That's the thing is, you know, there have been so many players, you know, David Beckham was supposed to go there and be this magical midfielder, and he sat the bench for most of the time that he was there. That's where he truly fell off a cliff, because at Man United, he was the man. Man United, he was the guy. David Beckham was still playing, he was English national team when he was sitting the bench at Real Madrid. He's still that good, but Real Madrid was so good. Galacticos, right? How do you get in that squad? How do you get in the squad if you're, you know, they're like talking about, well, you know, we're going to place Valverde with Trent Alexander-Arnold. Okay. But you have such a short leash at Man United. You have such a short leash at Real Madrid. You don't get a lot of opportunity. You get one chance to make a good first impression, right? Well, that's kind of how it is at Real Madrid on the pitch. Like, if you get brought in, you can have three excellent games and have one bad game. You're still going to have your spot. But if you have one bad game, if that's the first game and you have a really bad game, think about Jarrell Kwanzaa this season with Slot. One bad half, and he has struggled ever since then to get back in the squad. He's getting back in now. He's coming on as a substitute. Came on as a substitute yesterday against Southampton. Great to see. I mean, Kwanzaa, I love him. Got my kit with his name on it, 78. Love Jarrell Kwanzaa, man. Like, I in FC 25? Yeah, 25. I got him. I'm doing my Schalke rebuild. He's on my squad. He was one of the first players I purchased. I love Kwanzaa. But that's my point. You think Slot's got a short leash. Real Madrid's leash is even shorter. So he better go there in the season opener this summer. He better go out there and in the preseason, better have a magical preseason. But certainly on match day one, he better have the game of his life. Because Real Madrid will drop you in a heartbeat. Ancelotti, whoever the manager is, will drop you in a heartbeat. There's so many. If you think Liverpool has high expectations, you've not seen Trent. You have not seen the expectations that Real Madrid puts on you. And I can look at Exhibit A. I said David Beckham. We can talk about Eden Hazard. We can talk about a number of players through the years that have gone to Real Madrid, and they have failed miserably. They have crumbled under the pressure. And there's been ones that have gone that certainly have gone and done great things. You know, Fat Ronaldo, obviously Roberto Carlos and Zinedine Zidane, and there's a whole bunch of players right now. Jude Bellingham obviously had big expectations, high expectations for him coming from Borussia Dortmund to Real Madrid. He's lived up to them. Kylian Mbappe's struggling a little bit. He hasn't lived up to the expectations. He hasn't won anything yet at Real Madrid. You know, so the one of the most talented players on the planet has struggled to really find his way there and find his spot and his perfect situation within the club. So, and Trent's nowhere near, let's not get this twisted, right? Trent Alexander-Arnold is nowhere on Kylian Mbappe's level when it comes to, like, actual overall football talent, like a footballer, like what are, like, speed, shooting, finishing, defending, like all the things, all the disciplines, right? Take a whole magical hat full of all these attributes that you have, right? Let's just look, just say it's the FC 25, like all your attributes of your player in this video game, right? Like Mbappe is like 95 finishing, and, you know, first touch is 92. Like, Mbappe scores higher than Trent on almost every single discipline, right? Except maybe free kicks and corners, right? That might be it. But he has struggled to find his consistency with Real Madrid, okay? So Trent, you know, it's good luck to you, buddy. But that's the one I think that right now Liverpool has a player that we can skate by with in Connor Bradley. We go get somebody in the summer that either takes Trent's spot outright and becomes the new starting right back, or Connor gets it and you find a kind of a eight million quid player like Andy Robertson was back in the day coming out of Hull City's relegation season, and you get somebody else to back up Connor Bradley, then you have your two-headed right back thing going on there. Simikas at left back needs to be replaced. I think Robertson is pretty much getting towards his last set. We need a backup, or either a starting left back or a really good backup left back that can take over, that can maybe we can groom for one season until Robertson is truly out the door. And we need a left back. Excuse me, I said left back. Okay, we need a left back and right back. That's what we need. Let's just call it that. I'm getting all the backs backed up in my head, back with my back. So those are positions of need, but I think that the right back position is where Liverpool can most afford to lose Trent, because I have just seen enough of his average defending. I've seen enough blowbys from wingers from other teams. Just saw it during the week, as I said. Okay, PSG, we got lucky; they didn't score. Allison played a great game, but the defensive the back line got beat a lot of times. Trent is always, when it came to like players like Vinicius Jr., I mean, you could, you know, single-handedly say that 2022 Champions League final, you know, Trent blew his assignment really time and time again. It's what led up to where they pulled ahead of us. I mean, you know, Trent gets beat all the time by opposing wingers. That left wing is, any pace whatsoever, they're going to blow past Trent. And it's just, you know, he's a luxury player. If everything else on your club is going well, if you have a really stable midfield, and Liverpool has that. Liverpool has a midfield that is set for years to come. This has been one of the most brilliant midfield rebuilds in recent football history. Like, and I'm talking about recent football history being the last 10 to 15 years, right? This aging midfield, Wijnaldum, Coutinho, all those players, right? They're out the door. You get McAllister, you get Gravenberch, you promote Harvey, you go get Szoboszlai, you get Endo, and the last one of that old generation to leave was obviously Fabinho. And then you have that, now you have your rotation, you have your squad players, you have your starters, and before you know it, the back line is completely, the midfield is completely rebuilt. We kind of need to do that at the back line now. They have re-signed Salah. You still have Kisa, you still have Gakpo, you still have Lucha. We'll see what happens with Diaz in the summer, but for right now, they still have him. Nunez is still there. We'll see what happens with him again in the summer as well. And you have Diogo Jota. Liverpool's biggest weakness is the back line. It is. Bradley, I'm pretty sure he'll be okay, but he's not proven over 38 match days yet. We don't know. Can he stay healthy? Can he continue to mature and progress like Trent did when he was 18, 19, 20, when he was coming into his own as a everyday starter for Liverpool? Klopp brought him up and he progressed, right? So Konate's okay, VVD's okay, but you need to start thinking about replacement center backs. You really do, because Joe Gomez, I think that this is it for him. I mean, he's, you know, 8 years in, still has not yet to score a senior team goal. And I'm just over him. I'm just over the Joe Gomez experience. It hasn't worked out, and so it's time to move on. Need backup center backs, someone to fill the void, and come in. And we need to start talking about, you know, VVD's replacement in the next year or two, right? And then there's Robertson, Andy Robertson. So Simikas gone, Robertson. Maybe one more year. That'd be stretching it, right? And I think that's stretching it. So those are the transfers that those are the contract situations. And I think that when you look at it as a whole, I think most supporters would say, yeah, I think we're going to retain Salah. I think we're going to retain VVD, and Trent's going to go. And I think that's the way it should be. Honestly, if I had to keep, if I had to keep all three, I mean, okay, would I keep Trent? Sure. I mean, he's not broken. He's not damaged goods to where he's costing us, you know, match after match. But he's a guy, because our midfield is so excellent and our starting our front three is so excellent week in, week out, that you can afford to have a right back who's not defensively as sound as some others from other clubs. You know, I think of players like, you know, Philipp Lahm for Bayern Munich back in the day. And obviously, Cancelo, you know, players like that. You have to start thinking about, you know, what do you want to give up? What do you want to gain? And what you give up with Trent is defensive stability. But you gain set piece stuff that other fullbacks can't dream of. And so it's a great trade-off. You know, you're going to get beat sometimes when the other team has pace on the wing. It's just going to happen. And you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with that. We may concede because Trent got beat. And that's fine, because we are capable of scoring three goals the other way or two goals the other way. We can always come back from it, right? But that is kind of a really crappy thing to have to come to terms with, in the fact that you have to be okay with conceding because your right back can't get back fast enough, okay? And now it's the left back too, because Robbo's definitely lost pace. And so VVD, so they need a youth movement in the back line. And the next keeper's already coming in, so we know where Allison's replacement is. I think everything else is kind of set in stone. It'd be nice to get... See, the thing is Endo's done really well. Endo's done really well, in my opinion, this season especially, and he's really found his role within slot system to be able to come in and close games out. And he's a very reliable number six. He's that box-to-box midfielder that can do it all, Swiss Army knife defender. He can defend. He can help in the build-up. And like yesterday, if you look at Endo, like Endo is sitting there, and he comes on, and as soon as he comes on, he makes a big play. Southampton get possession, and as soon as they get possession, Endo presses the defender, the ball player from Southampton, he's in possession. He gets nervous. He makes a mistake. Endo's pressure forces an error, and the ball is back in Liverpool's possession. So, I mean, that was within seconds. I'm not even doing it justice. Like, it literally was instantaneous. Like, Southampton get possession. Endo presses. The attacking player has the ball and immediately is dispossessed, and Endo does his job. And you have to look at that. Like, what kind of value does he bring to your team? I really want to see him go, but I know that there are other options out there that may fill that number six role a lot better for Liverpool. But again, he didn't really cost much money. But you want some insurance policies, right? They're still talking about Zubimendi. They're still talking about this, that, and the other. And again, I'm not going to speculate on who will or who won't, or why they will or why they won't, because that is transfer gossip is transfer gossip. It's rumors, and it's all rumors until the player actually signs the dotted line. I don't even care how. I don't care if they're getting a physical in Liverpool, where they're getting their physical, if they're getting it in Timbuktu. Until they sign a contract, and until you see them holding up a kit with their name and number on it, then in my opinion, it didn't happen and it's not going to happen. So we can only focus on what we know, and what we know are the contracts that are expiring, and what should we do with those? And I say keep two of the three. Let the one go who is, I believe, of those three, the most expendable. I think that Trent is the most expendable, and I'm not saying he's certainly, from his set piece ability, he's not easily replaced, but he is absolutely a defensive liability in a lot of scenarios. And you can find someone who certainly is going to fit what Slot probably has in mind a little bit better than what Trent can serve up for you on the defensive side of the ball, you know. And wouldn't it be nice to have a line that just locked down? That used to, like the 2019 team, where was it? Three of the four players in the back line were up for made the team of the season for England in 2020. was it 2019, 2020, or 2018, 2019? It's just, you know, VVD, Robbo, and Trent, I think, were all Trent for not for his necessarily for his defending. I should say that, but that's where we're at. I mean, you know, and Liverpool obviously will sign some players this summer, I think, but I think those are the players that have helped transition Liverpool from, what was it Klopp said, you know, from dreamers to believers. And I think only two of them have really earned the right to stay at the club and like be paid what they're asking for. Now, like Trent can certainly stay, but he's going to ask for a lot of money, right? And like you have to ask, should we pay him this money and continue on with what he delivers, or should we take that money and invest it in somebody else that we might sacrifice a little bit on the offensive side or from a set piece perspective, but we're going to get a lot more stability in our defense. Our back line's going to be a lot safer, a lot sounder, and you're going to have a lot of, I think, Liverpool supporters that feel better about the defensive approach and the defensive line, that back four, if you get someone who is a right back that can get back, that is at least not world class, but a really great defender and has the ability to shut down the opposing player's winger, whoever that is, you know, whether it's a left mid or left wing, whatever. And that's where Trent's biggest liability is. Now, looking forward to the week ahead. So we have basically no match. Well, we don't have a match in the league next weekend. We have the League Cup final against Newcastle. And so we know what to expect from them, right? We played them just a couple weeks ago, obviously, minus Alexander Isak. And we played them. We know what we're going to expect there. It's a cup final. It's an elimination, do or die. It's not, you know, there's no 3 points at stake. There's a trophy at stake. So the one thing that bothers me more than anything else in that match is that Newcastle, they haven't won any silverware in a long time. So that's a worry that they're, you know, Liverpool have won we're defending League Cup champions as we record this right now. We won it last season. This would be back to back, and we also won it in 2022. So that'd be three in the last five. And back to back. So Newcastle's going to be very hungry for this. And that's the one thing that scares me. You know, for the first time in like one of these cup finals, we're not playing Chelsea. It seems like we always draw Chelsea no matter what, and we're playing Newcastle. So winnable match, obviously. We know Newcastle well, and it's just going to be a matter of like, I think it's just literally who wants it more. I think Slot would love to get that first trophy under his belt. Go ahead and get that done for the gaffer and just, you know, progress forward. But the big one this week, obviously, is the return. I mean, I say that's a big one, but the bigger one is the return fixture against PSG, so midweek. So Liverpool right now, plus 125 favorites, if you're looking at the line. They should, to me, okay, you saw, okay, Slot's got his 90 minutes of tape now he can look at and say, okay, this is, lock it down defensively. You had a friend of the show, Steven, made a suggestion, and this isn't going to happen, but I think it's brilliant. You know, play a 4-2-3-1. With, you know, you could put whoever you want up front. You can put Jota up front. You can put Gakpo up front. You can put Nunez up front. Three, a center attacking mid with surrounded by two wingers. So your winger is going to be probably Lucha and Salah on both sides. Probably put, you could put, I mean, who could you put in at the 10? I mean, you could honestly put McAllister at the 10. I love that move right there. And you put Gravenberch and Endo in as your two holding number sixes, right? In the 4-2-3-1. I love that strategy. Lock it down. Make basically PSG, because that also, putting that other holding number six in there is going to give stability. It's going to give a lot, take a lot of pressure off of your defensive liability, known as Trent Alexander-Arnold, who we just spent the last 15 minutes talking about how he's a defensive liability. That takes a lot of the pressure off of him, because Hendo always covered for him, right? All the time, we're like, well, why is Trent a bad defender now? He's always been a bad defender. But when he had Jordan Henderson as a number six, that box-to-box midfielder, and especially when he was in the position of playing as a holding number six, he had the legs and would get back, and he would help Trent to not get beat defensively. And he made it seem like Trent was a lot better defender than he was. And you didn't see him as this defensive liability who gets beat in one-on-one situations constantly. Well, when Trent found out that Hendo's legs were gone after the 2022 season, especially in that Champions League finals when it was really abundantly clear, next thing you know, Hendo's in Saudi and Trent's all by himself on an island. And that's where we start to see the holes in the Swiss cheese that is Trent Alexander-Arnold's overall game. He has glaring weaknesses. Well, another number six, not just Gravenberg back there by himself, but you put Endo back there. And the guy is an engine, right? Like we just talked about. He works his butt off. So that, I think, is a really, really great suggestion. And you only have to do it really, you know, just do it for, see how it works for 55, 60 minutes. And if it doesn't work, then you still have 30, 35 minutes to figure out something else, right? But I think that's a really good strategy, especially sitting on a 1-0 aggregate lead and you're at Anfield, you're at home. So on those two matches, and then one after that would be the final, the next week it would be the derby with Everton, Merseyside derby, then that one from Anfield. Hopefully gets some sweet, sweet revenge from that one. That was a draw that felt like a loss a couple of weeks ago at Goodison. It would be nice to smoke the Toffees 4-5-0 at home. I mean, just send them away with a bang. I mean, literally and figuratively. So, but that's April 2nd. That's a ways down the road. And I believe there's an international break in between then and now. So right now, focusing on League Cup and focusing on PSG. So predictions for those two matches, I'm going to go with Liverpool to beat PSG 2-0. I think that's the scoreline from Anfield. It's going to be a 2-0 win for Liverpool, win 3-0 in aggregate in the quarterfinals. And then in the League Cup final, I like Liverpool to beat Newcastle United 2-1. To win their first trophy of the 2024-25 season, the first of hopefully many. I'm talking about Champions League. Obviously, the Premier League is already in the bag. That'll be number two if we win next weekend. And then, you know, who knows, a Continental Super Cup, then the Club World Cup next season. I want it all. I'm greedy. I'm sorry. I want it all. So that's just me, though. I want it all. But those are the predictions on those games, and I really am curious to see how Slot's going to line up in both of them, because he's got to put his best 11 out there first, finish out PSG, and then bring home the silverware in the cup final. And Slot does not mess around when it comes to big games. I mean, that's Liverpool. As I said 2 weeks ago, the way you get points off of Liverpool was like Southampton scoring that goal before the half. And in Klopp's last few seasons, they were unable to unlock a low block, right? If a club was holding a 1-0 lead, one of these minnows from down at the bottom, that became very, you know, you get your equalizer and anything after the 80th minute and it becomes very, very nerve-wracking, right? No, you know, Liverpool goes, Nunez, they come out the half, score the equalizer, boom, the game turns on its head, boom, penalty, 2-1 Liverpool, and then we never look back. That's Slot, that is what you're looking for execution-wise. If you do concede, that you're able to come back very quickly and reestablish momentum and gain control of the match. And Slot has been a mastermind of that this season in so many situations where we were failing to do that in Klopp's later years, like 2022, 23, and obviously last season there was a couple times where a lot was left to be desired in the second half when we were trailing or we were tied and we needed something to happen big to get 3 points. We were unable to do so at the end. So Slot's been able to really, really take that particular weakness of the team and turn it into a strength where you're not as afraid when you're 1-0 down that you're not going to get 3 points. You kind of feel like if there's a whole half of football left to be played, which was the case yesterday, then chances are, especially at home, things are going to work out in your favor. So with that being said, I am anxious and eager to get to this week. Big matchups. Champions League quarterfinal berth is on the line. And bring on the first silverware of the 2024-25 season. I want to thank everybody again for subscribing, for listening, for supporting the podcast. But until we meet again, I hope everyone has a fantastic week. Be well, and we'll talk soon. Por tu